Welcome to this episode, this inaugural episode of the brand new Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'm really excited to bring this brand new idea for a show to your ears. And hopefully you're listening to this and maybe you're interested in disaster medicine. Maybe you are curious about disaster response and how that works. Well, this is going to be everything you wanted to know about dealing with disaster response, disaster medicine, austere medicine, whatever you want to call it. And I'm really excited to be kicking off this show, especially because I have a very qualified and capable co-host with me, the very unique and one and only personality of Sam Bradley. And Sam, it's so great to do this show with you. We've been on shows together before, but this is really going to be a lot of fun.
Thank you, Jamie. I am really excited about this because as long as you've known me, you know that this is a subject that's near and dear to my heart. And frankly, I don't think there's really a lot of exposure to disaster EMS and what, you know, disaster workers do out there. So I'm very excited about the show. I'm very excited about some of the ideas we talked about, and we're not close to running out of those. A little bit about me. You know, I've been on a few other podcasts, so some of you may have heard me before. I've been a paramedic for a really long time, but I'm also a disaster junkie, but that's a whole different story we'll talk about. But I have been on a number of different disaster teams at the local, the state, and the federal level, including the disaster medical assistance team at the federal level, and I've done a number of deployments. I think we'll probably talk about those at some point in time. So I really am enthused about the subject and the fact that we're finally going to get some information out there and maybe stimulate some of you into getting interested. But I'm really especially excited about having you learn about our partners in this that are kind of new to podcasting, but certainly not to EMS. And Dr. Joe Holly, would you like to introduce yourself and tell the folks about yourself?
Well, hi, Sam, and thank you. Jamie, hello to you as well. I am indeed very excited to be involved with this podcast. I'm also a disaster junkie from way back and really looking forward to getting this thing off the ground.
Joe, tell us a little bit briefly about your background and where you are and who you are and what you do with disaster response.
Okay, well, I'm an emergency physician and actually primarily now an EMS physician. I've been involved with disaster medicine for pretty much my entire career. I've got probably more now than 30 deployments with a federal urban search and rescue task force based where I am here in Memphis, Tennessee. And certainly have been involved with some of the major disasters in this country in the last 20 years, including the Pentagon and Katrina and multiple other various scenarios of all types. So I've certainly enjoyed doing that. I continue to be involved at the federal level, not only with my individual task force, but even in the kind of command and control structure with the incident support team for FEMA. So I have stayed involved. I guess my last deployment was probably the tornado in Moore, Oklahoma, several months ago.
Great. Sam, you want to introduce our other partner guest here?
I would love to, and I'm laughing to myself saying it's real easy to tell which of us are from Tennessee. This show's interesting because we've got West Coast, East Coast, and Tennessee, so it's kind of a fun bunch. So, Jim Logan. Another Memphis guy.
Memphis, but I'm a transplant from California, so that's been several years ago. But yeah, I'm just a paramedic. How about that? Right now, I'm currently employed right now as a firefighter paramedic with the Memphis Fire Department. I'm a officer with that department. Currently, I am holding down the fort as an emergency management officer for that department. But I've have several years in EMS and education. I write a little bit for all our trades journals like Jim's and EMS World, a couple textbooks, things like that. I've been with Tennessee Task Force 1 since 1996. I've got about 20 deployments, among them some pretty big deployments with the Pentagon on 9/11 and with Katrina a few years back. You know, we're pretty well situated in the southeast where hurricanes like to pop up. So we stay busy with that for quite some time now. I have been their medical coordinator for several years. Right now, I've kind of stepped back from that role a little bit, but still help out with that. But that's me, EMS for about 29 years. About 4 years ago, Joe and I created Paragon Medical Education Group, which is helping sponsor this show. Just from our experiences with things like the Pentagon and 9/11 and what we've learned in disaster medicine and in those conditions that aren't normal for everyday rescue and EMS. So we brought that to education in an interactive way that we'll be showing here and have been showing for the last 4 years, but we'll be at EMS Today coming up next month.
And it's actually next week. I mean, as we record. Well, it is next month because it's still January, so you're not wrong.
More day.
It's how that works. But you know, we want to thank you guys, and this episode and this show in general is going to be all about education and all about really being innovative in its way that we inform you and provide educational materials and reviews of new items and things like that. And in a future episode here coming up, we'll talk about some of the topics we're planning on covering. But part of what we want to focus on is really focusing on the innovation that you need to show to really do a good job of educating responders. And that's one of the reasons that I know Sam and I are so excited about this partnership with Paragon Medical Education Group. And we want to thank you guys for giving us the opportunity to pull this show together and bring the disaster podcast to the responder world out there to educate people about disaster and emergency response in that special type of environment, but also to encourage people to train, to educate themselves, and maybe bring new responders into the fold of disaster responders.
You know, both you and I, Joe, mentioned we're disaster junkies. I'm going to put this on you to define that for people. How do you define a disaster junkie?
Oh, I think that's a pretty good question, Sam. I'll have to say for me, it's, I can't think of any professional activity that I participate in that gives me more personal satisfaction than disaster response. And I think that's kind of how you define a junkie. I never, of course, wish a disaster on anybody, but they are bound to occur no matter what I wish for. And the opportunity that presents to engage with those folks and do what I think all folks in EMS do best, which is take care of patients and provide assistance and comfort, is really incredibly personally satisifying for me.
Yeah, this is Jim. It's kind of funny to watch when we go on these deployments. In the past, I'll say in the past, they have tried to keep Dr. Holly sheltered with a bubble around him in the at the base of operations where we take care of our own people and things like that. We have our own medical tent and things like that. But he's kind of hard to put the reins on these days. So he wants to be out there with the patients. So yeah, he's a junkie, all right.
Well, and maybe we should. This is going to be a fun one, but how do we define disaster? I think when most people think of that, they think of natural disasters, weather-related disasters, in some cases human-caused disasters, but there's disasters at all kinds of levels. I know, you know, even in a local community or even within a crew, something that happens to someone that just rocks their world. I don't know. Jim, what do you think about that?
Well, you know, there's your textbook's answers that, you know, it can be by number of people. And, you know, we're talking mass casualty incidents, and that could be it's defined really by your resources and how they're utilized and how they could be taxed. But, you know, you have disasters, and then you have disasters of, you know, biblical proportion like Katrina. You know, we're still not over that. It's very hard. It's from community to community. So it doesn't have to be a Katrina. It doesn't have to be a Pentagon or Hurricane X or earthquake why. It could be whatever it is in your you know, your community. Take for instance what happened in Atlanta this week. That was a disaster.
Yeah, I mean, it really was, I think, and I think what we're going to focus on is any incidents that may overwhelm the immediate resources of a community. And that could be a man-made incident, such as what occurred at the Boston Marathon bombing. It's going to be things like what happened in Atlanta. And the for those of you that haven't been watching the news or have been living in a hole for the last week, last few days, it's recently there was this ice storm that hit Atlanta. It left a half inch to an inch of ice on the interstate. And people were stranded on a major U.S. highway for 18 to 20 hours. In some cases, and they required response from local resources, right?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, Jamie. You know, I sort of have an additional definition, I guess, of disaster, and that's any situation in which it feels like chaos. And I view sort of disaster management and disaster medicine in many cases as, you know, in bringing order out of chaos. That's kind of scaleless as it is. It can be anything from, you know, a bad traffic accident or an ice storm in Atlanta to, you know, a major act of terrorism.
Exactly. And it depends on the people involved in it and how they do react to it. You know, the resources that you have available. It's just, it's such a, such a big definition. We couldn't hope to capitalize on all of it, trying to explain all of it. But I think as we go through these podcasts, we will be talking about different types of disasters and how they're managed. We'll be talking about different types of teams, both from the local perspective to the state level to the federal level. And hopefully over time, we'll flesh out all of these things we're talking about right now.
Well, and I also think we need to also think about just general community preparedness because, we're going to be, you're going to be waiting for those state and federal responders to come in, but it's also going to fall to the local community to manage themselves for a certain period of time. And this has been a consistent problem that we see time and again as people are failing to be basically prepared for just common, relatively common weather occurrences or things like that.
Yeah, I think that's important. You know, someone once said, you know, all disasters are local. And I think that was a Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill, I believe is who it was way back when. But all disasters are local. And your local community has to be prepared to be self-sufficient for, you know, we found, you know, it used to be that the mantra was 3 to 5 days. Now it's at least 7 days you need to be self-sufficient. And with that, it takes planning, it takes preparation, it takes preparedness, response, and then the longest of them all, recovery. So it takes a good, strong community, good, strong leadership to realize that and realize, you know, we live in an age of convenience and we're always relying on someone to help us. But you're right, Jamie, you've got to have that local support and you have to have that local emergency management to sustain that community for that amount of time.
This is Joe, and I think Jim's exactly right. You know, I think one of the exciting things for us about disaster medicine is it's incredibly broad ranging, and certainly everything you guys just were talking about is part of what we'll be covering on this podcast. I think also, though, it's an opportunity for us to talk about sort of disaster-specific medically related issues and sort of the unique set of medical problems that disaster responders often face, whether that's involved with a patient who's in a collapsed structure of some sort, or even their own care and exposure and post-event follow-up and the psychological aspects of disaster medicine. So it's a huge topic that we hope to address from many, many different aspects during the course of these podcasts.
Yeah, you just, this podcast will never end. We're never going to run out of material. But based on what you guys were saying about Atlanta, of course, that's hard for me. I live in California. We just finally got rain yesterday for the first time in like months. So ice is, of course, I'll find that out next week. But one of the things I was thinking about that Jamie said something was all these people sitting in their cars for 18 hours. How many people think, especially when you live in winter conditions, that you should have some survival supplies? Do you guys carry survival supplies in your vehicles? Do you have water? Do you have a source of food? Things like that, if you get stuck someplace?
I work with emergency management here in Memphis. And so we encourage people to have a kit for their car, a kit for their home, you know, it's a to-go kit, a stationary kit. So yes, we do. We don't get, you know, for us here in, I guess that question is better suited for Jamie up north, but we get a little ice every now and then. This year has been a little different with everybody across the United States. So, so we're not, you know, we're not as prepared probably as Jamie is up in the Northeast. And, you know, I think one of the things that we may be forgetting for Atlanta is I can't remember the last time they got snow. So it's just something that's not really even common for them at all each year. So
I think I heard one state official in the news made a comment that something like this hadn't occurred since the 80s. So, you know, the last time they got a major event that and it really it comes down to regional preparedness. If an ice storm had hit the Northeast, which we've had before, they would have pre-salted the roads. There would have been all kinds of preparations done. And I think it was just the not being ready. Or not, that's not even fair, but not having the resources available to even deploy the way that other areas of the country would deploy for the same type of situation. And that's really where we come back to this whole concept of being overwhelmed, having your resources overwhelmed by something that may not be a big deal in other parts of the country.
Good point.
I think you're exactly right, Jamie. It's disasters are ultimately local occurrences no matter what. And, what's a disaster in Atlanta is just another Thursday in, upper Northeast. So that's always a part of it and always will be. That's why it's disaster is hard to define because it's a pretty relative term in many cases.
And I think we can bring this around to talk a little bit about Paragon, because one of the reasons that we're so excited to partner with you guys is that you are bringing a different type of education, a different outlook on education for this type of event to better prepare responders for the unusual things they're likely to come across, and so that they're better able to adapt and retool themselves for whatever given situation comes along. And I don't know, Joe, if you or Jim want to kind of talk about your perspective on that type of education and why you think it's so important.
Yeah, this is Jim. So what we've both learned with deployments and our deployments to disasters and our experience in EMS in general is, you know, you have traditional education, and you learn the things you need to learn for, you know, first of all, your initial education just to pass the test, right? To pass your national registry, whatever state exam you have to pass. And then there's continuing education. And adult learners, which we all are in EMS and fire services and rescue, it's better and you learn more if you're interactive, and you have that activity. So what we've done is, we create an environment or an experience, if you will, that really, gets into stress immersion. So we put the provider, be it EMS, be it nursing, be it a physician, first responder X, we put them in those situations that they would be pressed into. Not so much in a drill or an exercise fashion, but in an educational environment. First, there's a didactic section. We use PowerPoint, but we use it very in a limited fashion. We have, you know, most of the models of classes we have, the PowerPoint's a very small part of what we do. But the rest of it is what you already know, but put to a test in either a, you know, simulated environment with, you know, auditory stimulation, visual stimulation, and just pressed into those areas where you're challenged. And we also use cadaveric specimens as well to replicate what injuries you may experience in those given situations.
Jim's covered it beautifully. You know, I think for us it is all about realism and that opportunity to make mistakes in as realistic an environment as we can create, so that when the real disaster hits, you've already had that exposure, that stress immersion, as Jim said so well. You know, I think the problem with disaster medicine from an educational standpoint is that disasters are sort of few and far between. And for most people, they are in a disaster maybe once in their career. And they learn the same lessons that we've learned, but they never really have an opportunity to go back and apply those to the next disaster because it just doesn't happen that often. So a lot of what we try to do is take all those lessons learned that seem to be very consistent and very reproducible and repeatable and allow that stuff to happen for folks so that when the first one, maybe the only one in their career, does actually happen, they're past all that. They're veterans to some extent and ready to engage in a much more productive and useful way in that disaster.
You know, one thing that we also focus on too is how it's something that maybe you, Jamie and Sam can chime in from the parts of the country that you're in. I think EMS is often challenged in the ICS structure with the medical branch and how that is not a limb that hangs off of an oak tree. It is an actual function in an ICS structure, and it helps to make the operation go smoother. So we really focus on ICS and the medical branch and how that works. So both fire-based, public, private, whatever model of EMS that you use, and with hospital tests, because we incorporate nursing with it too, so we use HICS. So, you know, if you don't, like Joe said, in the disaster situations or those big events, if you don't use something, you're going to be lost or you'll lose it. So we really try to bring out the ICS structure, and so we become a good EMS becomes a good fit with everybody else that uses that.
And that makes a lot of sense because everybody knows it. That is one thing, regardless of what part of the country you're in or what kind of disaster you're involved in. The feds have a slightly different model, but it's all something that everybody understands. And if they adhere to it, things are going to work. Let's talk for a second about disaster people. Who are these folks that come out of their ERs and off their fire engines and out of their ambulances and go to some place that may not have water, may not have electricity? You're eating MREs, God forbid. What, first of all, who do you think these people are, and why do they keep going back and doing it? And Joe, I'd like to know, what really was your first exposure to disaster? What got you hooked on it?
I don't know that I remember my first disaster, actually. I think it was probably a hurricane deployment. I'm not sure I can recall any specific event from that, really, as much as the sense of sort of unencumbered taking care of folks, you know, knowing that to some extent you sort of had to create the situation yourself. I think a lot of what attracts people to it has to do with a desire to adapt and overcome, to improvise when you have to, and, you know, a depth of knowledge and understanding that allows you to utilize the environment that you're in for the betterment of your patient and the situation, and using your brain in a fairly unencumbered and outside the box kind of approach. And also sort of back to, you know, from a physician aspect, it's really kind of back to the core of the physician-patient interaction, and that is I don't have access to a CT scanner or, you know, X-ray or anything else. I've just got to figure it out based on my own clinical skills, and that's a very pure experience and quite satisfying and thrilling all at the same time.
Jim, you have some thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah, I'm thinking a lot, actually. This kind of brings back some memories. So my background really is in special operations. So for me, it was, and for most of the guys that are on the team that we're on, our background is if you were in special operations, you were expected. It was an automatic that you were on the USAR team. It just kind of came natural for that. But, you know, I guess the question is, who are these people? These are people that really care deeply. These people are the folks that go the extra mile. These folks sometimes, and maybe this is a subject for a later date, but, you know, self-dispatch, which can be dangerous at times without that food and water and those, that support mechanism going down the road. Cause I can tell you, and we can talk about this later, but it's very important that you have those support structures around you to help get through those days when there's no water, there's no food, there's no toilet, there's no anything. So, it's a special person that goes to these, and I'm not talking about myself, but I just look, like, thinking about people that I've been associated with on these deployments, that these are special people that have a need and desire in their heart to go the extra mile.
Yeah, Jim, I have to agree with you that there's definitely a challenge with self-response, and we'll definitely have to include that as one of our future episodes, because it is an issue with local and regional disasters and situations, as well as you know, people just want to help out, but they can become more part of the problem if they're not part of the official response because they don't have those resources. So we'll definitely touch on that. And I think it's a good point for us to wrap up, because in a future episode, we're going to be covering in our very next episode just kind of a list of some of the topics, and also ask you to get back to us with topics you'd like us to cover. And so we're going to go ahead and leave this episode, this inaugural episode of the Disaster Podcast. And as we close out, I want to give everybody a chance to chime in and tell us where they can be found. Joe, do you want to tell us where people can find out more about you and Jim and Paragon Medical Education Group?
Well, you bet. We're on the web at paragonmedicalgroup.com, or actually prehospitaleducation.com. We've got a Facebook page that's Paragon Medical Education Group on Facebook, and a Twitter feed too. Paragon Med EDU is our feed on Twitter. If you want to see us in person, and I'm not sure that you do, but you certainly can come see us in person. We're going to be sharing our experiences and our part of our lab at EMS today on the pre-conference day, and the first day of the conference we'll be running the specialty cadaver lab that'll be going on there.
And that's going to be really exciting. I have to urge people, you're listening to this first episode, if you're one of the few that are catching our very first episode and you're going to be coming to EMS today, make sure you stop by and say hi to Joe and Jim and maybe get a chance to come in and participate in the cadaver lab. That's going to be one of the unique experiences that you get to have in your career, and you don't want to miss it. So make sure you catch that. And again, Joe and Jim, thanks so much for your support and partnership on getting this podcast kicked off.
Oh, our pleasure. Our pleasure, Jamie and Sam.
And Sam, where can folks find you?
Well, on our brand new website, disasterpodcast.com. We're very excited about that. And to fall back on something you said earlier, Jamie, I'm really hoping we can get people to let us know what they want to, what we should talk about. We're going to be doing interviews. We mentioned EMS today. We're going to be doing live interviews there. We're going to be doing a couple of our podcasts from there. So I'm really excited about that. You can find me on Twitter at SamBradley11 and on Facebook at Sam Bradley. That's all pretty simple. And that's pretty much it for now.
Yeah, and you can leave a comment for Sam and I over at the Disaster Podcast site. There'll be places for comments below every single episode on the website. So you just scroll down to the bottom of the episode page and leave a comment for whatever you have to say, suggestions for future episodes. We want to hear from you. This is as much your podcast as it is ours. So we want you to be participatory and let us know what you like, what you don't like, and what you want to hear more of so that we can bring you the program that's going to cater to your needs in education and the special kind of experiential education that we hope to bring you from this show and from the folks over at Paragon. So again, thanks very much. Remember, you can find us over at disasterpodcast.com. I'm Jamie Davis, the PodMedic. You can find me under PodMedic everywhere. And we want to thank you for checking out the Disaster Podcast. Sam, you have any final thoughts?
I do. My final thought is that disaster medicine is not your everyday medicine, and we're going to be hoping to teach you a lot more about it.